inside, because Rusty already felt bad enough without them rubbing it in. Charlotte picked up an extra paper plate. She tried to fold it into an airplane so that she could give it to her father. Samantha asked, "What time are we supposed to pick up Daddy from work?" Gamma said, "He'll get a ride from somebody at the courthouse." Charlotte hoped Lenore would give him a ride. Rusty's secretary had loaned her a book called Lace, which was about four friends, and one of them was raped by a sheik, only you don't know which one, and she got pregnant, and no one told the daughter what happened until she was an adult and she got really rich, and she asked them, "Which one of you bitches is my mother?" "Well, shit." Gamma stood up. "I hope you girls don't mind being vegetarian tonight." "Mom?" Charlotte dropped down into the chair. She put her head in her hands, feigning sickness in hope of soliciting a can of soup for dinner instead. "My stomach hurts." Gamma asked, "Don't you have homework?" "Chemistry." Charlotte looked up. "Can you help me?" "It's not rocket science." Charlotte asked, "Do you mean it's not rocket science so I should be able to figure it out on my own? Or do you mean it's not rocket science, and that is the only science that you know how to perform, and so therefore you cannot help me?" "There are too many conjunctions in that sentence," Gamma said. "Go wash your hands."
"I believe I had a valid question."
"Now." Charlotte ran into the hall. It was so long that you could stand in the kitchen and treat it as a bowling alley. At least, that was what Gamma said. And that was exactly what Charlotte was going to do, as soon as she could get a ball. She opened one of the five doors and found the stairs to the yucky basement. She tried another and found the hallway to the bachelor farmer's scary bedroom.
"Fudge!"
Charlotte bellowed, but only for Gamma's sake. She opened another door, the shiver robe. Charlotte grinned because she was playing a joke on Samantha. Or maybe not a joke. Whatever it was called when you wanted to scare the crap out of somebody. She was trying to convince her sister that the HP was haunted. Yesterday, Charlotte had found a weird black-and-white photograph in one of the thrift store boxes. At first, she had started to color it, but she only got as far as yellowing the teeth when she had the idea to stick the picture in the bottom drawer of the shiver robe for Samantha to find. Her sister had been appropriately freaked out, probably because the night before, Charlotte creaked the boards outside of her room so that Samantha would follow her down to the scary bedroom where the bachelor farmer had died, where she planted the idea that the old geezer had left the house in body, but not spirit. As in, he was a ghost. Charlotte tried another door.
"Found it!"
She yanked the cord for the light. She pulled down her shorts, but froze when she noticed a sprinkling of blood on the toilet seat. This wasn't the blood like Samantha sometimes left when she was having her period. This was a sprinkle, the kind that came out of your mouth when you coughed too hard. Gamma was coughing too hard a lot. Charlotte pulled up her shorts. She turned on the faucet and cupped her hands under the water. She splashed the toilet seat to wash away the red spots. Then she saw that there were more red dots on the floor. She threw some water on those, then on the mirror because there was some there, too. Even the moldy edge of the corner shower had been sprayed. The phone rang in the kitchen. Charlotte waited through two more rings, wondering if they were going to answer it. Gamma wouldn't let them pick up sometimes because it might be Rusty. She was still upset about the fire, but she wasn't moping like Samantha. She was screaming, mostly. And she cried, too, but only Charlotte knew about that. The handle of the ball-peen hammer was soaked by the time Charlotte banged off the faucet. Her butt got wet when she sat down on the toilet seat. Charlotte could see that she had made a mess. Some of the water had turned pink. She pulled up her shorts. She dotted at the water with a wad of toilet paper. The paper began to disintegrate, so she used more. And then she used even more. Paper was supposed to absorb stuff, but all she was doing was creating a giant wad of wet paper that would clog the toilet if she tried to flush it. Charlotte stood up. She looked around the bathroom. The pink was gone, but there was still a lot of water. The room was kind of damp anyway. The shower mold was something out of a movie with a lagoon where a swamp monster comes out. In the hall, a box jangled. Sam let out a strangled noise, like she'd stubbed her toe.
Fudge,
Charlotte said, for real this time. The wad of toilet paper was pink with blood. She shoved it into the front pocket of her shorts. There wasn't time to pee. She shut the bathroom door behind her. Samantha was 10 feet away. Charlotte punched her sister in her arm to distract her from the wet lump in her shorts. Then she galloped the rest of the way up the hall because horses were faster.
Dinner!
Gamma called. She was standing by the stove when Charlotte cantered into the kitchen. Charlotte said, I'm right here. Your sister isn't. Charlotte saw the thick noodles Gamma dug out of the pot with a pair of tongs.
Mom, please don't make us eat that.
I'm not going to let you starve.
I could eat a bowl of ice cream.
Do you want explosive diarrhea? Charlotte got sick from anything that had milk in it, but she was pretty sure the ropey spaghetti would have the same effect.
Mama, what would happen if I ate 2 bowls of ice cream? Really big ones.
Your intestines would burst and you would die.
Charlotte studied her mother's back. Sometimes she couldn't tell when Gamma was being serious.
The phone gave the trill of a ring. Charlotte grabbed the receiver before Gamma could tell her not to.
Hello? She said.
Hey there, Charlie Bear.
Rusty chuckled, like he hadn't said the same words to her 1,000,000 times before.
I was hoping to speak with my dear Gamma.
Gamma could hear Rusty's question from across the room because he always talked too loud on the phone. She shook her head at Charlotte and mouthed the word no to make it clear.
She's brushing her teeth, Charlotte said. Or maybe she's flossing by now? I heard squeaking, but I thought it was a mouse, only...
Gamma grabbed the phone. She told Rusty, Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all. She put the phone back on the hook. She asked Charlotte, Did you know that the chicken is the most common bird on earth? Charlotte shook her head. She did not know that. I'll help you with your chemistry after supper, which will not be ice cream.
The chemistry won't be ice cream or the supper?
Clever girl. She held Charlotte's face in one hand. You're going to find a man one day who's going to fall head over heels in love with that brain of yours. Charlotte pictured a man tripping and flipping through the air like a plastic fork.
What if he breaks his neck when he falls?
Gamma kissed the top of Charlotte's head before leaving the kitchen. Charlotte sunk into the chair. She leaned back and saw that her mother was heading toward the pantry. Or the basement stairs. Or the chiffer robe. Or the bedroom. Or the bathroom. She dropped the chair back to the floor. She leaned her elbows on the table. Charlotte wasn't sure she wanted a man to fall in love with her. There was a boy at school who was in love with Samantha. Peter Alexander. He played jazz guitar and wanted to move to Atlanta and join a band when he got out of high school. At least, that's what he wrote about in the long, boring letters that Samantha used to keep hidden between her mattress and box spring. Peter was the thing that Samantha moped about losing the most. Charlotte had seen Samantha let him touch her under her shirt, which meant that she really liked him, because you weren't supposed to do that otherwise. He had a cool leather jacket that he'd let her borrow, and it had been burned up in the fire. He'd gotten into a lot of trouble with his parents for losing it. He wasn't talking to Samantha anymore. Charlotte had a lot of friends who weren't talking to her, too, but Rusty said that was because their parents were imbeciles who didn't think it was a bad thing for a black man to be executed on death row, even though he was innocent. She whistled between her teeth as she folded down the sides of the paper plate and tried again to turn it into an airplane. Rusty had also told Charlotte that the fire had switched things around for a little while. Gamma and Samantha, who were usually the logical ones, had changed places with Rusty and Charlotte, who were usually the emotional ones. It was like Freaky Friday, except they couldn't get a basset hound because Samantha was allergic. Charlotte licked the creases of the plane, hoping her spit would help it retain the shape. She hadn't told Rusty that her logical switch hadn't really flipped. She was pretending like everything was okay when it wasn't okay. Charlotte had lost stuff, too, like all of her Nancy Drews, her goldfish, which was an actual living thing, her brownie badges, and 6 dead insects she had been saving for next year because she knew that in honors biology, the first assignment was that you had to pin insects to a board and identify them for the teacher. Several times, Charlotte had tried to talk about her sadness with Samantha, but all Samantha would do was start listing all the things she had lost, like it was a contest. So then Charlotte had tried to talk about other things, like school and TV shows and the books she had checked out from the library. But Samantha would stare at her until Charlotte got the message and went away. The only time her sister treated her like a normal human being was at night, when they washed their shirts and shorts and sports bras out at the bathroom sink. Their track clothes and sneakers were the only things they had left after the fire. But Samantha didn't talk about them. She would walk Charlotte slowly, patiently through the blind pass, like it was the only thing left in their lives that mattered. Bend your front leg. Hold your hand straight behind you. Lean forward, into the track, but don't push off until I'm at my mark. Once you feel the baton snap into your hand, go. Don't look back, Samantha would say. You have to trust me to be there. Just keep your head down and run. Samantha had always loved running. She wanted to get a track scholarship so she could run all the way to college and never come back to Pikeville, which meant she could be gone in a year because Gamma was going to let her skip another grade if she scored a perfect 1600 on the SAT. Charlotte gave up on the airplane, defeated. The plate wouldn't hold its new shape. It wanted to stay a plate. She should get some notebook paper and do it the right way. Charlotte wanted to throw the airplane off the old weather tower. Rusty had promised to take her there because he was working on a surprise for Gamma. The bachelor farmer had been a citizen scientist with the National Weather Service Cooperative Observers Program. Rusty had found boxes full of weather journal data forms in the barn where the farmer had recorded the temperature, barometric pressure, precipitation, wind, and humidity almost every day since 1948. There were thousands of volunteers around the country just like him who sent their readings to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to help scientists predict when storms and tornadoes were going to form. Basically, you had to do a lot of math. And if there was one thing that could make Gamma happy, it was doing math every day. The weather tower was going to be the biggest surprise of her life. Charlotte heard a car in the driveway. She grabbed the failed airplane and tore it to pieces so that Rusty wouldn't guess what she was up to, because he'd already told her she couldn't climb to the top of the metal tower and throw a paper airplane off it. At the trash can, she dug into her shorts and pulled out the gross clumps of wet toilet paper. She wiped her hands on her shirt. She ran to the door to see her father.
Mama!
Charlotte yelled, but she didn't tell her that Rusty was here. She pulled open the door, smiling, and then she stopped smiling because two men were on the front porch. One of them stepped back onto the stairs. Charlotte saw his eyes go wide, like he wasn't expecting the door to open. And then she saw that he was wearing a black ski mask and a black shirt and leather gloves. And then she saw the barrel of a shotgun stuck in her face.
Mom!
Charlotte screamed.
Shut up!
Black Shirt hissed, pushing Charlotte back into the kitchen. His heavy boots tracked in red clay from the yard. Charlotte should have been terrified. She should have been screaming, but all she could think about was how mad Gamma was going to be about having to clean the floor again.
Charlie Quinn,
Gamma called from the bathroom. Do not shriek at me like a street urchin. Blackshirt said,
Where's your daddy?
Please, Charlotte stuttered. She was talking to the second guy. He was in a mask and gloves, too, but he had on a white Bon Jovi T-shirt, which made him feel less threatening, even though he had a gun.
Please don't hurt us.
Bon Jovi was looking past Charlotte, down the hallway. She could hear her mother's slow footsteps. Gamma must have seen him when she came out of the bathroom. She knew something was wrong, that Charlotte wasn't in the kitchen on her own.
Hey!
Blackshirt snapped his fingers for Charlotte's attention.
Where's your fucking daddy?
Charlotte shook her head.
Why would they want Rusty?
Blackshirt asked,
Who else is in the house?
She said, My sister's in...
Suddenly, Gamma's hand was wrapped around Charlotte's mouth. Her fingers dug into her shoulder. She told the men, There's $50 in my purse and another $200 in a mason jar in the barn.
Fuck that,
Blackshirt said.
Call your other daughter in here. Don't try any shit.
No.
Bon Jovi seemed nervous.
They were supposed to be at track practice, man. Let's just...
Charlotte was violently jerked out of Gamma's arms. Blackshirt's hand gripped her neck, his fingers like clamps. The back of her head was pinned to his chest. She felt his fingers cinching around her esophagus, pulling it like a handle. He told Gamma,
Call her, bitch.
Sam...
Gamma was so scared that she could hardly raise her voice.
Samantha?
They listened. They waited. Bon Jovi said,
Forget it, man. He's not here. Let's do like she said and take the money and go. Grow some balls, you fucking pussy.
Blackshirt tightened his grip on Charlotte's throat. The pain burned like fire. She couldn't breathe. She went up on her toes, her fingers wrapped around his wrist, but he was too strong. He told Gamma,
Get her in here before I...
Samantha!
Gamma's tone was sharp. Please ensure the faucet valve is closed and quickly make your way into the kitchen. Bon Jovi stepped away from the mouth of the hallway so that Samantha couldn't see him. He told Blackshirt,
Come on, man. She did what you said. Let her go.
Slowly, Blackshirt loosened his grip on Charlotte's neck. She gagged on the rush of air. She tried to go to her mother, but his hand flattened to her chest. He pinned Charlotte tight against his body. Gamma said,
You don't have to do this.
She was talking to Bon Jovi.
We don't know who you are. We don't know your names. You can leave now and we won't tell anyone.
Shut the fuck up.
Blackshirt shifted back and forth.
I'm not stupid enough to believe a goddamn thing any of you say.
You can't...
Gamma coughed into her hand.
Please, let my daughters go and I'll...
She coughed again.
You can take me to the bank. Keep the car. I'll give you every penny we have.
I'ma take whatever I want.
Blackshirt's hand slid down Charlotte's chest. He pressed hard against her sternum, rubbed into her back. His private parts poked her. She felt a sudden sickness. Her bladder wanted to release. Her face turned hot.
Stop it!
Bon Jovi grabbed Charlotte's arm. He pulled, then pulled harder, and finally he managed to wrench her away.
Baby,
Gamma enveloped Charlotte, throwing her arms tight around her shoulders, kissing her head, then her ear. She whispered,
Run, if you...
Without warning, Gamma let go, almost pushing Charlotte away. She took two steps back until she was against the kitchen counter. Her hands were in the air. Blackshirt had the shotgun pointed at her chest.
Please.
Gamma's lips trembled.
Please. I beg you.
Her voice was low, like it was just her and Blackshirt in the room.
You can do anything you want to me, but don't hurt my baby.
Don't worry,
Blackshirt whispered too.
It only hurts the first couple of dozen times.
Charlotte started to shake. She knew what he meant. The dark look in his eyes, his tongue darting out between his wet lips, the way his thing had pressed into her back. Her knees stopped working. She stumbled back into the chair. Sweat covered her face. More sweat poured down her back. She looked at her hands, but they weren't like her normal hands. The bones were vibrating inside as if a tuning fork had been struck against her chest. Gamma said,
It's okay.
Blackshirt said,
No, it ain't.
They weren't talking to each other anymore. Samantha was standing in the doorway, frozen like a frightened rabbit. Blackshirt asked,
Who else is in the house?
Gamma shook her head.
Nobody.
Don't lie to me.
Charlotte's hearing became muffled. She heard her father's name, saw the angry look in Gamma's eyes. Rusty. They were looking for Rusty. Charlotte began to rock, unable to stop the back-and-forth movement as she instinctively tried to calm herself. This wasn't a movie. There were two men inside the house. They had guns. They didn't want money. They had come for Rusty, but now that they knew Rusty wasn't here, Blackshirt had decided he wanted something else. Charlotte knew what that something else was. She had read about it in Lenore's book. And Gamma was only here because Charlotte had called her. And Samantha was only here because Charlotte had told the men that her sister was in the house.
"I'm sorry,"
Charlotte whispered. She couldn't hold her bladder anymore. She felt the warm liquid slide down her leg. She closed her eyes. She rocked back and forth.
"I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry."
Samantha squeezed Charlotte's hand so hard she could feel the bones move. Charlotte was going to throw up. Her stomach kept clenching, rolling like she was trapped on a boat in the pitching sea. She squeezed her eyes closed. She thought about running, the soles of her shoes slapping the ground, her legs burning, her chest aching for air. Samantha was beside her, ponytail flapping in the wind, smiling, telling Charlotte what to do. "Breathe through it, slow and steady. Wait for the pain to pass."
"I said shut the fuck up!"
Blackshirt screamed. Charlotte lifted her head, but it was like she was moving through a thick oil. There was an explosion. Then a blast of hot liquid slashed at her face and neck so hard that she fell against Samantha at the table. Charlotte started screaming before she knew why. Blood was everywhere, like a hose had been turned on. It was warm and viscous, and it covered her face, her hands, her entire body.
"Shut up!"
Blackshirt slapped Charlotte across the face. Samantha grabbed her. She was sobbing, shaking, screaming.
"Gamma,"
Samantha whispered. Charlie clung to her sister. She turned her head. She made herself look at her mother because she wanted to make sure she never forgot what these fuckers had done. Bright white bone. Pieces of heart and lung. Cords of tendon and arteries and veins and life spilled out of her gaping wounds. Bon Jovi yelled,
"Jesus Christ, Zach!"
Charlie kept herself still, unresponsive. She was never going to give herself away ever again. Zachariah Culpepper. She had read his case files. Rusty had represented him at least four times. Gamma had said just last night that if Zach Culpepper paid his bills, the family wouldn't have to live at the farmhouse.
"Fuck!"
Zach was staring at Samantha. She had read the files, too.
"Fuck!"
"Mama,"
Charlie said, trying to distract them to convince Zach that she didn't know.
"Mama, mama, mama." "It's all right,"
Samantha tried to soothe.
"It ain't all right."
Zach threw his mask on the floor. He had raccoon eyes from Gamma's blood. He looked like his mugshot, but uglier.
"God damn it! What'd you have to use my name for, boy?"
"I didn't, Bon Jovi stammered.
"I'm sorry."
"We won't tell."
Samantha was looking down at the floor like it wasn't too late.
"We won't say anything, I promise."
"Girl, I just blew your mama to bits. You really think you're walking out of here alive?"
"No," Bon Jovi said. "That's not what we came for."
"I came here to erase some bills, boy," Zach said. "Now I'm thinking it's me that Rusty Quinn's got to pay."
"No," Bon Jovi repeated.
"I told you."
Zach shut him up by jamming the shotgun into his face.
"You ain't seeing the big picture here. We gotta get out of town, and that takes a hell of a lot of money. Everybody knows Rusty Quinn keeps cash in his house."
"The house burned down," Samantha said. "Everything burned down."
"Fuck!"
Zach screamed.
"Fuck!"
He pushed Bon Jovi into the hallway. He kept the shotgun pointed at Samantha's head, his finger on the trigger.
No!
Charlie pulled her sister down to the floor, away from the shotgun. She felt grit on her knees. Shattered bone riddled the floor. She looked at Gamma. She took her waxy, white hand. The heat had already left her body. She whispered,
"Don't be dead. Mama, please, I love you. I love you so much."
She heard Zack say,
"Why are you acting like you don't know how this is gonna end?"
Sam tugged at Charlie's arm.
"Charlie, get up."
Zack said,
"We ain't leaving this place without you getting some blood on your hands, too."
Sam repeated, "Charlie, get up."
"I can't."
She was trying to hear what Bon Jovi was saying.
"I can't let..."
Samantha practically picked her up and put her back in the chair.
"Run when you can,"
she whispered to Charlie. The same thing Gamma had tried to tell her.
"Don't look back. Just run."
"What are you two saying?"
Zack walked back to the table. His boots crunched something on the floor. He pressed the shotgun to Sam's forehead. Charlie could see pieces of Gamma stuck to the barrel. He asked Sam,
"What did you tell her to do? Make a run for it? Try to get away?"
Charlie made a noise in her throat, trying to divert his attention. Zack kept the shotgun on Sam, but he smiled at Charlie, showing a row of crooked, stained teeth.
"What'd she tell you to do, baby doll?"
Charlie tried not to think about the way his voice changed when he talked to her.
"Come on, honey."
Zack stared at her chest. He licked his lips again.
"Ain't we gonna be friends?"
Stop,
Sam said. The shotgun was pressed so hard into her forehead that a trickle of blood seeped out.
"Leave her alone."
"Was I talking to you, bitch?"
Zack leaned into the shotgun. Sam's head tilted back from the pressure.
"Was I?"
Sam's jaw tightened, her fists clenched. It was like watching a pot finally come to boil, except it was rage bubbling up inside of her. She shouted,
"You leave us alone, Zachariah Culpepper!"
Zack shifted his weight back on his heels, startled by her defiance. Sam said,
"I know exactly who you are, you fucking pervert."
He gripped the shotgun in his hands, his lip curled.
"I'm gonna peel off your eyelids so you can watch me slice out your sister's cherry with my knife."
They glared at each other. Sam wasn't going to back down. Charlie had seen her like this before. That look she got in her eyes when she wasn't going to listen to anybody. Except this wasn't Rusty, or the mean girls at school. This was a man with a shotgun, with a temper, who had almost beaten another man to death last year. Charlie had seen the photos in Rusty's files. She had read the police report. Zachariah had fractured the guy's skull with his bare hands. A whimper came out of Charlie's mouth.
"Zack,"
Bon Jovi said.
"Come on, man."
Charlie waited for Sam to look away, but she didn't. Wouldn't. Couldn't. Bon Jovi said,
"We had a deal, all right?"
Zack didn't move. None of them moved.
"We had a deal,"
Bon Jovi repeated.
"Sure."
Zack tossed the shotgun to Bon Jovi.
"A man's only as good as his word."
He acted like he was going to walk away, but his hand moved fast, like a rattlesnake striking. He grabbed Sam's face and pushed her so hard back into the sink that her head clanged against the cast iron.
"No!"
Charlie screamed.
"You think I'm a pervert now?"
Zack was so close to Sam that his spit globbed onto her face.
"You got something else to say about me?"
Sam's mouth opened, but she couldn't scream. She grabbed at his arm with her hands, scratching, clawing, but Zack's fingernails were digging into her eyeballs. Blood cried down like tears. Sam's feet kicked out. She gasped for air.
"Stop it!"
Charlie jumped on Zack's back, punching him with her fists.
"Stop!"
He threw her across the room. Charlie's head smacked into the wall like a clattering bell. Her vision doubled, but then it sharpened on Sam. Zack had left her on the floor. Blood streamed down her cheeks, pooled into the collar of her shirt.
Sammy!
Charlie cried. She tried to look at Sam's eyes to see the damage he had done.
Sam, look at me. Can you see me? Look at me, please!
Carefully, Sam tried to open her eyelids. They were torn like pieces of wet paper. Zack said,
"What the fuck is this?"
The bathroom faucet hammer. He picked it up off the floor. He winked at Charlie.
"Wonder what I can do with this."
"Enough!" Bon Jovi snatched away the hammer and threw it down the hallway. Zack shrugged.
"Just having a little fun, brother."
"Both of you stand up," Bon Jovi said. "Let's get this over with." Charlie didn't move. Sam blinked away blood.
"Help her up,"
Bon Jovi told Zack. "You promised, man. Don't make this worse than it has to be." Zack yanked Sam up so hard that her shoulder made a popping sound. She bumped against the table. Zack pushed her toward the door. She bumped into a chair. Charlie grabbed her hand to keep her from falling. Bon Jovi opened the door.
"Go."
Charlie went first, shuffling sideways to help Sam down the stairs. Sam had her other hand out in front of her like she was blind. Charlie saw their shoes and socks. If they could put them on, they could run. But only if Sam could see where to go.
"Can you see?" Charlie asked her. "Sam, can you see?"
"Yes," Sam said, but that had to be a lie. She couldn't even open her eyelids all the way.
"This way,"
Bon Jovi indicated the field behind the HP. The soil was freshly planted. They weren't supposed to walk on it, but Charlie walked where she was told, guiding Sam behind her, helping her navigate the deep furrows. Charlie asked Bon Jovi,
"Where are we going?"
Zack dug the shotgun into Sam's back.
"Keep walking."
"I don't understand," Charlie said to Bon Jovi. "Why are you doing this?"
He shook his head. Charlie asked,
"What did we do to you, mister? We're just kids. We don't deserve this."
"Shut up," Zack warned. "Both of you shut the fuck up."
Sam squeezed Charlie's hand even tighter than before. She had her head up like she was a dog trying to get a scent. Instinctively, Charlie knew what her sister was doing. 2 days ago, Gamma had shown them a topographical map of the area. Sam was trying to remember the landmarks, to get her bearings. Charlie tried to, too. The neighbor's acreage went past the horizon, but the ground was completely flat that way. Even if Charlie managed to zigzag as she ran, Sam would end up tripping and falling. Trees bordered the far right side of the property. If she could lead Sam that way, they might be able to find a place to hide. There was a creek on the other side of the forest that went underneath the weather tower. Beyond that was a paved road, but people didn't use it. There was an abandoned barn half a mile north. A second farm was 2 miles east.
That would be the best bet.
If she could get Sam to the second farm, they could call Rusty and he would save them. Zack said,
"What's that?"
Charlie looked back at the farmhouse. She saw headlights, 2 floating dots in the distance. Not Lenore's van.
"It's a car."
"Shit, they're gonna make my truck in 2 seconds.
Zack jammed the shotgun into Samantha's back, using it like a rudder to steer her.
"Y'all keep moving or I'll shoot you right here."
Right here. Charlie stiffened at the words. She prayed that Sam hadn't heard them, that she didn't get their meaning.
"There's another way out of this."
Sam's head was turned toward Bon Jovi, even though she couldn't see him. Zack snorted. Sam said,
"I'll do whatever you want."
She cleared her throat.
"Anything."
"Shit," Zack said. "You don't think I'm gonna take what I want anyways, you stupid bitch?"
Charlie swallowed back the taste of bile. She saw a clearing up ahead. She could run with Sam there, find a place to hide. Sam said,
"We won't tell them it was you. We'll say you had your masks on the entire time and..."
"With my truck in the driveway and your mama dead in the house."
Zack snorted again.
"Y'all Quinns think you're so fucking smart, can talk your way out of anything."
Charlie didn't know any places to hide in the woods. She'd been stuck unpacking boxes since they moved, no time for exploring. Charlie and Sam's best bet was to run back to the HP, where the policeman was. Charlie could lead Sam across the field. Her sister would have to trust her. The same way she kept saying Charlie should trust her with the blind pass. Sam was a fast runner, faster than Charlie. As long as she didn't stumble.
"Listen to me," Sam said. "You've got to leave town anyway. There's no reason to kill us, too."
She turned toward Bon Jovi.
"Please just think about it. All you have to do is tie us up, leave us somewhere they won't find us. You're going to have to leave town either way. You don't want more blood on your hands."
Bon Jovi was already shaking his head.
"I'm sorry."
Charlie felt a finger slide up her back. She shivered, and Zack laughed.
"Let my sister go," Sam said. "She's 13, just a kid."
"Don't look like no kid to me."
Zack made pinching motions at Charlie's chest.
"Got them nice high titties."
"Shut up," Bon Jovi warned.
"I mean it."
"She won't tell anyone," Sam tried. "She'll say it was strangers, won't you, Charlie?"
"Black fella?" Zack asked. "Like the one your daddy got off for murder?"
Charlie felt his fingers brush across her breast. She turned on him, screaming.
"You mean like he got you off for showing your wiener to a bunch of little girls?"
"Charlie," Sam begged.
"Please be quiet."
"Let her speak," Zack said. "I like it when they got a little fight in them."
Charlie glared at him. She marched through the woods, pulling Sam behind her, trying not to go too fast, anxious to go fast enough so that Zack didn't walk alongside her.
"No,"
Charlie whispered. Why was she going fast? She needed to go slow. The farther they got away from the HP, the more dangerous it would be to break off and run back. Charlie stopped. She turned around. She could barely see the lights in the kitchen. Zack had the shotgun in Sam's back again.
"Move."
Pine needles cut into Charlie's bare feet as she trudged deeper into the woods. The air got cooler. Her shorts were stiff with dried urine. She could feel the inside of her thighs starting to chafe. Every step felt like it was wearing away a fresh layer of skin. She glanced back at Sam. Her eyes were closed, hand out in front of her. Leaves rustled under their feet. Charlie stopped to help Sam over a fallen tree. They walked through the stream, the water like ice on her feet. The clouds shifted, letting in a sliver more of moonlight. In the distance, Charlie could see the outline of the weather tower, the rusted steel structure like a skeleton against the dark sky. Charlie felt her sense of direction click into place. If the tower was on her left, then they were walking east. The second farm was about 2 miles north on her right. 2 miles. Charlie's best mile was 7.01. Sam could do a 5.52 on a flat surface. The forest wasn't flat. The moonlight was unpredictable. Sam could not see. They could do an 8-minute mile, maybe, if Charlie paid attention, if she looked straight in front of her instead of looking back. She scanned ahead, searching for the best path, the clearest route. It was too late.
"Sam?"
Charlie stumbled to a stop. A trickle of urine rolled down her leg again. She gripped her sister around the waist.
"There's a shovel. A shovel."
Sam's fingers felt along her face, pushed up her eyelids. She sucked in a quick rush of air when she saw what was in front of them. 6 feet away, dark, wet earth opened up like a wound in the ground. Charlie's teeth were chattering again. She could hear the clicking. Zack and Bon Jovi had dug a grave for Rusty, and now they were going to use it for Sam and Charlie. They had to run. Charlie knew that now, felt it to the core of her being. Sam could see at least enough to see the grave, which meant she might be able to see enough to run. There was no choice. They couldn't stand here politely waiting for their own murders. And whatever else Zachariah Culpepper had in mind. Charlie squeezed Sam's hand. Sam squeezed back that she was ready. All they had to do was wait for the right moment.
All right, big boy, time for you to do your part.
Zack leaned the shotgun butt on his hip. He slapped open a switchblade with his other hand.
The guns will be too loud. Take this. Right across the throat like you do with a pig.
Bon Jovi stood there, unmoving. Zack said,
Come on, like we agreed. You do her. I'll take care of the little one.
Bon Jovi said,
She's right. We don't have to do this. The plan wasn't ever to hurt the women. They weren't even supposed to be here. Say what now?
Sam squeezed Charlie's hand even harder. They both watched, waited.
Bon Jovi said, What's done is done. We don't have to make it worse by killing more people. Innocent people? Jesus Christ.
Zack worked the knife closed, then shoved it back into his pocket.
We went over this back in the kitchen, man. Ain't like we got a choice. We can turn ourselves in. Bullshit.
Sam leaned into Charlie, pushing her a few steps to the right, getting her ready to go.
Bon Jovi said, I'll turn myself in. I'll take the blame for everything. The hell you will.
Zack shoved Bon Jovi in the chest.
You think I'm going to go down on a murder charge because you grew a fucking conscience?
Sam let go of Charlie's hand. Charlie felt her heart drop into her stomach. Sam whispered, Charlie, run.
I won't tell, Bon Jovi said. I'll say it was me.
Charlie tried to grab Sam's hand back. They had to stay close so that she could show Sam the way.
In my goddamn truck?
Sam waved her away, whispering, Go! Charlie shook her head. What did she mean? She couldn't go without Sam. She couldn't leave her sister here.
Motherfucker.
Zack had the shotgun pointed at Bon Jovi's chest.
This is what's gonna happen, son. You're gonna take my knife and you're gonna slice open that bitch's throat, or I will blow a hole in your chest the size of Texas.
He stamped his foot.
Right now.
Bon Jovi pointed his gun at Zack's head.
We're gonna turn ourselves in. Get that fucking gun out of my face, you pansy-ass piece of shit.
Sam nudged Charlie, telling her to move.
Go.
Charlie didn't move. She wasn't going to leave her sister. Bon Jovi said,
I'll kill you before I kill them. You ain't got the balls to pull that trigger. I'll do it.
Charlie heard her teeth chattering again. Should she go? Would Sam follow her? Is that what she meant?
Run,
Sam begged.
You have to run.
Don't look back. You have to trust me to be there.
Piece of shit.
Zack's free hand snaked out. Bon Jovi backhanded the shotgun.
Run!
Sam shoved her hard. Charlie, go! Charlie fell back onto her ass, slamming into the ground. She saw the bright flash of the gun firing, heard the sudden explosion of the bullet leaving the barrel, and then a mist puffed from the side of Sam's head. Sam spun through the air, almost somersaulting like the fork had, into the gaping mouth of the grave. Thunk. Charlie stared at the open earth, waiting, begging, praying for Sam to sit up, to look around, to say something, anything that indicated that she was alive.
Shit,
Bon Jovi said.
Christ! Jesus Christ!
He dropped the gun like it was poison. Charlie saw the glint of metal from the weapon as it hit the ground. The flash of shock on Bon Jovi's face. The sudden white of Zack's teeth when he grinned. at Charlie. He was grinning at Charlie. She scrambled away, crab-like on her hands and knees. Zack started toward her, but Bon Jovi grabbed his shirt.
What the fuck are we going to do?
Charlie's back hit a tree. She pushed herself up. Her knees shook. Her hands shook. Her whole body was shaking. She looked at the grave. Her sister was in a grave. Sam had been shot in the head. Charlie couldn't see her. Didn't know if she was alive or dead or needed help or...
It's okay, sweet pea, Zack told Charlie. Stay right there for me.
I just... Bon Jovi stuttered. I just killed.
He couldn't have killed Sam. The bullet from the gun was small, not like the shotgun. Maybe it hadn't really hurt her. Maybe Sam was okay, hiding in the grave, ready to spring up and run. But she wasn't springing up. She wasn't moving, or talking, or shouting, or bossing everybody around. Charlie needed her sister to speak, to tell her what to do. What would Sam say right now? What would she tell Charlie to do?
Zack said, You cover this bitch up. Let me take the little one off for a minute.
Christ! Sam wouldn't be talking right now. She would be yelling, furious at Charlie for just standing there, for blowing this chance, for not doing what Sam had coached her to do. Don't look back. Trust me to be there. Keep your head down and... Charlie ran. Her arms flailed. Her feet struggled for purchase. Tree limbs slashed at her face. She couldn't breathe. Her lungs felt like needles were stabbing into her chest. Breathe through it. Slow and steady. Wait for the pain to pass. They used to be best friends. They used to do everything together. And then Sam had gone to high school and Charlie had been left behind. And the only way she could get her sister's attention was to ask Sam to teach her how to run. Don't hold the tension. Breathe in for two strides. Breathe out for one. Charlie hated every part of running because it was stupid and it hurt and it made you sore. But she had wanted to spend time with Sam, to do something that her sister was doing, to maybe be better at it one day than Sam was. So Charlie went to the track with her sister. She joined the team at school, and she timed herself every day because every day she was getting faster.
Get back here!
Zack yelled. 2 miles to the second farmhouse. 12? Maybe 13 minutes. Charlie couldn't run faster than a boy, but she could run for longer. She had the stamina. The training. She knew how to ignore the pain in her body, to breathe into the shock in her lungs when the air sliced like a razor. What she had never trained for was the panic from hearing the heavy tread of boots pounding dirt behind her. The way the thud, thud, thud vibrated inside of her chest. Zachariah Culpepper was coming after her. Charlie ran faster. She tucked her arms into her sides. She forced out the tension in her shoulders. She imagined her legs were pistons in a fast-working machine. She tuned out the pine cones and sharp rocks gouging open her bare feet. She thought about the muscles that were helping her move. Calves, quads, hamstrings, tighten your core, protect your back. Zachariah was getting closer. She could hear him like a steam engine bearing down. Charlie vaulted over a fallen tree. She scanned left, then right, knowing she shouldn't run in a straight line. She needed to locate the weather tower to make sure she was heading in the correct direction, but she knew if she looked back, she would see Zachariah Culpepper, and that seeing him would make her panic even more. And if she panicked even more, she would stumble. And if she stumbled, she would fall. And then he would rape her. Charlie veered right, her toes gripping the dirt as she altered direction. At the last minute, she saw another fallen tree. She flung herself over it, landing awkwardly. Her foot twisted. She felt her ankle bone touch earth. Pain sliced up her leg. She kept going, and going, and going. Her feet were sticky with blood. Sweat dripped down her body. Her lungs burned in her chest, but not as much as it would burn if Zachariah pinched her breast again. Her guts cramped. Her bowels had turned to liquid. But that was nothing compared to how she would feel if Zachariah shoved his thing inside of her. Charlie scanned ahead for light. Any indication of civilization. How much time had passed? How much longer could he keep running? Picture the finish line in your head. You have to want it more than the person behind you. Zachariah wanted something. Charlie wanted something more, to get away, to get help for her sister, to find Rusty so he could figure out a way to make it all better. Suddenly, Charlie's head jerked back with such violence that she felt like she was being decapitated. Her feet flew out into the air in front of her, her back slammed against the ground. She saw her breath huff out of her mouth like it was a real thing. Zachariah was on top of her. His hands were everywhere, grabbing her breasts, pulling her shorts. His teeth clashed against her closed mouth. She scratched at his eyes. She tried to bring up her knee into his crotch, but she couldn't bend her leg. Zachariah sat up, straddling her. Charlie kept slapping at him, tried in vain to buck off the tremendous weight of his body. He worked his belt back through the buckle. Her mouth opened. She had no breath left to scream. She was dizzy. Vomit burned up her throat. She closed her eyes and saw Sam twisting through the air. She could hear the thump of her sister's body hitting the grave like it was happening all over again. And then she saw Gamma on the kitchen floor, back to the cabinet. Bright white bone, pieces of heart and lung, cords of tendon and arteries and veins and life spilling out of her gaping wounds.
No!
Charlie screamed, her hands turning into fists. She pounded into Zachariah's chest, swung so hard at his jaw that his head whipped around. Blood sprayed out of his mouth, big globs of it, not like the tiny dots from Gamma.
Fucking bitch!
He reared back his hand to punch her. Charlie saw a blur out of the corner of her eye.
Get off her!
Bon Jovi flew through the air, tackling Zachariah to the ground. His fists swung back and forth. He straddled Zachariah the same way Zachariah had straddled Charlie. Bon Jovi's arms windmilled as he beat the other man into the ground.
Motherfucker! He yelled. I'll fucking kill you!
Charlie backed away from the men. Her hands pressed deep into the earth as she forced herself to stand. She stumbled. She wiped her eyes. Sweat had turned the dried blood on her face and neck back to liquid. She spun around in a circle, blind as Sam. She couldn't get her bearings. She didn't know which way to run, but she knew that she had to keep moving. Her ankle screamed as she ran back into the woods. She didn't look for the weather tower. She didn't listen for the stream or try to find Sam or head toward the HP. She kept running, then walking. Then she felt so exhausted that she wanted to crawl. Finally, she gave in to it, collapsing to her hands and knees. She listened for footsteps behind her, but all she could hear was her own heavy breaths panting out of her mouth. She threw up. Bile hit the ground and splattered back into her face. She wanted to lie down, to close her eyes, to go to sleep and wake up in a week when this was all over. Sam, in the grave, bullet in her head. Gamma, in the kitchen, bright white bone, pieces of heart and lung. Cords of tendon and arteries and veins and her life gone in the flash of a shotgun because of Zachariah Culpepper. Charlie knew his name. She knew Bon Jovi's build, his voice, the way he'd stood silently by while Gamma was murdered, the way his hand had arced through the air when he'd shot Sam in the head, the way Zachariah had called him brother. Brother. She would see them both dead. She would watch the executioner strap them to the wooden chair and put the metal hat on their heads with the sponge underneath so that they wouldn't catch on fire, and she would look between Zachariah Culpepper's legs to watch the urine come out when he realized that he was going to be electrocuted to death. Charlie got up. She stumbled. Then she walked. Then she jogged. And eventually, finally, she saw the light on the porch outside the second farmhouse. Chapter 7. Sam Quinn alternated her arms, left, then right, then left again, as she cut a narrow channel through the cool waters of the swimming pool. She turned her head every third stroke and drew in a long breath. Her feet fluttered. She waited for the next breath. Left, right, left, breathe. She had always loved the calmness, the simplicity of the freestyle stroke, that she had to concentrate just enough on swimming so that all extraneous thoughts cleared her mind. No telephones rang under the water. No laptops pinged with urgent meetings. There was no reading emails in the pool. She saw the 2-meter line, the indication that the lane was about to end, and coasted until her fingers touched the wall. Sam kneeled on the floor of the pool, breathing heavily, checking her swimmer's watch. 2.4 kilometers at 150 seconds per 100 meters, so 37.5 seconds per 25-meter length. She felt a pang of disappointment when she saw the numbers, which were within seconds of yesterday's, because her competitive streak glowed in white-hot opposition to her physical capabilities. Sam glanced down the length of the pool, wondering if she had another short burst inside of her. No. Today was Sam's birthday. She was not going to tire herself out so much that she had to use her cane to walk to the office. She pushed herself up onto the edge of the pool. She quickly showered off the salt water. The tips of her fingers were furrowed and rough against the Egyptian cotton towel. Somewhere in the back of Sam's mind, her mother's voice told her that the body's response to being submerged so long was to wrinkle the pads of the fingers and toes in order to improve grip. Gemma had been 44 when she'd died, the same age that Sam was now. Or at least, would be, in another 3.5 hours. Sam kept on her prescription goggles while she rode the elevator up to her apartment. The chrome on the back of the doors showed her wavy reflection. Slim build, black one-piece suit. Sam ran her fingers through her hair to help it dry. 28 years ago, she had walked into the woods behind the farmhouse with hair the color of a raven's feather. Almost a month later, she'd awakened in the hospital to find a shock of white stubble growing from her shaved head. Sam had gotten used to the double takes, the surprised looks when strangers realized that the gray-haired old woman in the back of the classroom, buying wine at the supermarket, walking through the park, was actually a young girl. Though admittedly, that wasn't happening nearly as much lately. Sam's husband had warned her that one day her face would finally catch up to her hair. The elevator door slid open. The sun was winking through the floor-to-ceiling windows that lined her apartment. Down below, the financial district was wide awake, car horns and cranes and the usual din of activity muffled behind the triple-paned glazing. Sam walked to the kitchen, turning off lights as she went. She exchanged her goggles for her glasses. She put out food for the cat. She filled the kettle. She prepared her tea infuser, mug, and spoon. But before boiling the water, she went to the yoga mat in her living room. She took off her glasses. She ran through a series of stretches to keep her muscles limber. She ended up on the mat, legs crossed. She rested the backs of her hands on her knees. She touched her middle fingers to her thumbs in a light pinch. She closed her eyes, breathed deeply, and considered her brain. Several years after she had been shot, a psychiatrist had shown Sam a homunculus of the motor areas of her brain. The man had wanted her to see the path the bullet had traveled so that Sam could understand the structures that had been damaged. He wanted her to think about those structures at least once a day, to spend as much time as she could muster in contemplating the individual folds and crevices, and to visualize her brain and body working in perfect tandem.